and doing what people call bread porn for a long time.
But the bread stuff, that's actually more of a hobby for this comic.
Sometimes I wake up in the morning, my first thought is, I don't think I'm gonna get a nap today.
But don't sleep on him. He's worked with some really big names. Matt Damon, Seinfeld, and so many more.
There'll be times I'll just be like flipping through my messages and be like, oh, there's Gaffigan, Daniel Tosh, you know, and be like, wow, it's so weird that these people are in my phone.
He does specialize in family comedy, which can mean explaining your success to your own family.
I used to be cool. Like, I had fun before I was a dad.
Comedian, actor, author, bread maker, Tom Papa.
On the Pulse.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse, the show where we are talking to people, doing cool things, using their voice for good, making a difference, hearing their stories. I love doing it. And of course, today we have one of those people. So he's a comedian, he's a host, podcast, radio, multiple books, a bread connoisseur. I don't even know how we're officially supposed to introduce Tom Papa. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, nice to be with you.
Appreciate it. Do all those things work?
Yeah, all those things work. It depends on the day which one has more focus. It's I always lead with comedian, but I was people are knowing me for the bread so much. I was on American Airlines recently and a flight attendant came up and said, oh, nice to see you. And I was like, oh, thanks. I thought they were going to say I was funny. Right. And they said, I'm so sorry. Our bread is really horrible on this flight.
It's like, what? So I'm doing all the research and I guess we'll kind of work backwards because we started there. So going through that, how you got started, comedian and all that. But I'm going to jump right to the bread guy. How did this even happen? Like, you have this whole career, you just really love bread?
Yeah, I was always cooking and hosting and stuff. I come from a family of, you know, people who celebrate with food. And but when I was working on Red Oaks, this TV show on Amazon, one of the fellow writers was taught me about sourdough bread and how it creates this like sourdough starter. And that's how the real bread was made. And that's where the first yeast was found by humans and this whole thing. And for Christmas, my daughter got a sourdough starter started for me off of that story and gave it to me. And I always say that it was one of the greatest acting roles I've had was pretending that I was happy to get this gift on Christmas morning of this bowl of goo. But I made my first loaf of bread off of it, and something about it just hooked me. I mean, of course, everybody loves bread, but the process of it also hooked me, and I haven't stopped. And people I just bake it all the time. Now the weird guy in the neighborhood who bakes too much bread and like drops it off at all the neighbors. I bring it to people. My podcast, I give it to people. I was just with Paul Reiser yesterday and he's like, I really had to convince him. No, I made this. It's like this beautiful, I've gotten really good at it. So it looks like store-bought bread. And Paul Reiser was like, I don't see you being funny and baking bread. This doesn't line up, but it's true.
Well, and it's not like you have any shortage of things to do with your time. So that's why when I'm sitting there, I was going through your Instagram page and just kind of doing some research and looking and, you know, comedy routine and sit down with podcasts and big name folks and, you know, movies and books and bread. It was still just kind of like, huh. And that's the thing that also has blown up.
Yeah. And I'm going to have a line of bread products coming out, like bread tools and stuff, just because this company came and approached me, but I wasn't doing it for marketing. I just love it. And I really do think there's something really valuable to having a craft outside of how you make your living, something that you can go to in your quiet time and work on and get better. If it's an instrument or working on a car or quilting or anything where you can, it's yours, your brain, your spirit is getting into it, getting better at it. I think it's a nice companion piece for your life.
And if somebody decides they also want to pay for that, then then why not?
And if they want to start a bakery with me, I'm up for that too.
I love it. All right. So that's how we got to bread, but let's backpedal a little bit. How did this get started? How did the career get started? I feel like you've had an interesting journey of like 6 degrees of separation with various people.
I just wanted to be a comedian since I was a kid. Okay. And when I was like in seventh grade, it kind of all clicked for me because I was funny. And that's when I learned that you could actually be funny as a job. Like, I had no idea in my little brain that grown-ups were funny for a living. And once I learned that, I was like, oh, all right, I'm gonna head that way. All these other jobs look pretty lame. I'm going to go towards that as a career. And I just stuck to it. And when I got out of school, I went into New York and started doing open mics and just got hooked right away. And, you know, it's a very difficult thing to start stand-up comedy. There's no pay for years. You're up late at night. You're traveling to weird places where nobody wants you. There's a lot of really negative things about it, but I was so happy. And that's how I knew this is exactly what I was supposed to be doing, because none of the hardship ever registered. It was just, oh man, I think I'm becoming a comedian.
And even at what? Seventh grade is 13, like 14.
Yeah.
So even then you knew and figured out your path and just stayed the course.
I did. I always had it. And anything that comes up as you're going through and your parents want you to go to school, or you got to get good grades, or you need to make money, there's all these things that could divert you. But I always just kept quietly moving towards that direction. I just always knew I was going to head that way. And I think it's a good test. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of times obstacles get thrown up, and that really is kind of a good gut check of how passionate you are, how badly you want it. And I think when you find something, if you're lucky enough to find something like that, it's really a blessing.
So you knew that young that you wanted to do it. When did you know that you could do it? Like, you continued to stay the course, but was there an aha moment when you're like, okay, this isn't a dream anymore, this is a career?
I think the first time I went on stage in a stand-up capacity, like, my first show was, there were six people in the audience. Four were my friends and they who paid the two drink minimum so I could get up on stage. And that first time I had to do 5 minutes, but I had to prepare it. I had to get some jokes in order, get an idea of what I was going to say, and stand up there at the mic and actually do it. You know, it probably, if we were to look at a video of it, it would probably be like, okay, like, that guy's, he's got something, but this is, you know, pretty horrible. But for me, standing up there and telling a joke and having people laugh in the spot I wanted them to laugh was so exciting. It was like, yeah, it really just, and a lot of comedians will say this, like, their first time on stage, it's like, it confirms everything that you kind of fantasized about and you thought, maybe this will be cool. Will this be fun? And then that first laugh hits you and it's like a powerful drug.
You know, it's interesting because we've had a lot of comedians come through with various levels of success on the show. And I think that there are some like you, but honestly, it feels like there are fewer who just, I just love it. I always wanted to make people laugh, the passion. There were others who kind of were good at it, saw that they could be a career choice, saw they could make money. But it's interesting the difference between the two, because even now it seems like you just still love this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really, you have to stop and check yourself once in a while, especially like this time of year. You've been on a lot of flights, been through a lot of hotels where you couldn't find the switch. You've been at a lot of, you know, by the end of the year, we all, whatever job you're in, you start to feel like, yeah, we need a break. We need Christmas to come.
No doubt.
And I'm at that moment now, but the idea that I get tonight to like walk out on stage is just this quiet little gift. And there's just, I never really separate the how fortunate it is that I get to go do that. Like you have to remind yourself sometimes, you're like, you'll be in the airport and you can't find your bag or whatever. But when you get back to the hotel and you're kind of aggravated and you just kind of just calm down, it's just like, but wait a minute.
Right.
We are in Chicago. We're going on stage. We're going to tell jokes. They're going to give you money and you're going to go home.
And people want to come see you. And people are paying
to
come there and have you make them laugh. I think it's that that interesting line where people are like, I have to do this. No, I get to do this.
Exactly. There's truth to that.
So if you still have that mindset, is it tougher to figure out when, because you just loved getting on stage. So was there a big break? Because it transitioned obviously to doing movies and touring, with big names and being the big name and continuing going forward. So is there a time that you view as that big break, or just on stage was the break and the rest was kind of history?
No, there's definitely moments where you kind of you get to a certain level and then you kind of hover there for a while and you have your sights on the next step, like getting on TV or getting to tour, having people know you and come out, being able to write books or whatever. So you have these moments. I always say though, my biggest break was when I was a young comic and I was just starting to make my way, and I met Jerry Seinfeld. He came back to the clubs after his show was over and he was getting back into stand-up, and he just started hanging around the clubs in New York over like this month. He was just kind of like showing up and just kind of checking out what everybody was doing. And I was on stage two nights in a row when he walked in. And at the end of the second set, I came off and he called me over by the bar and he's like, "You're really funny." And I was like, "Whoa, boy." And I grabbed onto his coattails and didn't let go. And it really, I say it was my big break, because him approving me made other people who were around, hiring you for shows and stuff, be like, "Oh, well, if he thinks he's funny, then there's probably something there." So it helped that way. But it also really helped in that it was a confirmation of how I worked was a plausible path. Like, I would see comedians like, drinking or partying, and they just seem to go up on stage and riff. And I was always sitting with my notebook and writing the jokes down and coming in and working on it and going. And he worked very similarly to me. So I just learned from him that you could really treat this as a craft that you could get better at. And that was huge. Because then I could even work harder at it without any doubt that if I put in the work, it'll pay off.
Right.
And that, when you're young and finding your way, that lesson, seeing somebody, anybody successful who's been down the path before you is a huge, huge, huge thing.
I started off, or I mentioned before, the 6 degrees of separation. So when you're sitting back and reading through your bio and doing some of the research and see, like you mentioned Jerry Seinfeld, and then there's Rob Zombie, and there's Steve Carell, and there's Judd Apatow, and you could name all these different names with this kind of 6 degrees of separation, how they all have touched your career or you've touched theirs at some point. Is that just natural evolution, or that to me was like, huh, so you got Jerry Seinfeld and Rob Zombie in the same sentence together in a career?
Yeah, it's funny. I think it's pretty natural. I mean, you get, it's really, show business is kind of this community, and we're all just big kids hanging out and putting on plays and putting on films and doing shows, and there's a real camaraderie. And people help each other out the way that they were helped out at different parts of their career. And it really, and I remember sensing that because I would start in New York hosting shows before, like hosting a show at Stand Up New York, which is a club there. And I was just starting, but I was good enough that they would ask me to host the shows. And I remember one night I brought up like Jon Stewart, Ray Romano, Brett Butler, and a couple other people. And I was like, I just got here and I'm on the same stage as these folk. I think I found a trap door into show business. I mean, I found a way to get access to all these people. And then you start meeting them. And then over the years, they become your friends.
Yeah.
And they become people that you worked with, or they interviewed you, or you interviewed them. And it's really fun. Like, there'll be times I'll just be like flipping through my messages and be like, oh, there was Gaffigan, Daniel Tosh, you know, and be like, wow, it's so weird that these people are in my phone.
I know, you know? Right? So there are still those moments when you're like, whoa, this is my life. Like, I'm
yeah,
loving
all
this.
The time. Like, if my nephew, I've got a bunch of great nephews and stuff, and I'll just say something, like just kind of mention somebody, and they're like, you can see in their eyes, like, dude, that's a big deal that you're friends with so and so. I'm like, yeah, you're right, you're right. I forget because they're my friends, but yeah, that is kind of cool.
So tell us about, there have been multiple specials, multiple shows. You host the podcast. So Home Free is the latest.
Yes,
special
just came out
just now. Like, kind of taking people inside your life. I was watching clips of you pretending to be sad that your kids are out of the house now. So tell us about Home Free.
Yeah, the hardest part is pretending. Wait, I say we just dropped my kids off at school, and nobody tells you how hard it's going to be pretending to be sad. It's really true. Like, you know, people who've watched my career, my family is a big part of my comedy, and you know, I don't just talk about my family, but you know, I talk about the community, I talk about the country and all that stuff, but it all is rooted in family. And through my specials, this is my third for Netflix, but my sixth overall. And they've watched my life progress because I'm always talking about what's real and what's happening. So they've seen my kids be born and now leave the house. So it's this kind of cool arc to the work, you know, to see it coming out. And there is a joy, I have to say, as much as I love them and they're still a part of my life and I can't wait, they're coming home for Thanksgiving, there is kind of this, oh, I can go back to not being a everyday dad. This is pretty amazing.
Like, I'm done.
I used to be cool. Like, I had fun before I was a dad. I had fun, and I used to go to bars, and my wife was fun to be with when we weren't talking about school schedules. And it's like, whoa, nobody told me that there's this joy that's coming. So that's where the Home Free of it came. It's just like, I feel like this is another, like another, it's kind of a step back, but a step forward. I mean, the bummer is that you're excited to move on. You're like, I have this freedom. But, you know, it's like a ball player coming back and like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get back in the game. And you're like, yeah, but my knees aren't so good anymore.
Yeah, I don't know about going to the club anymore if I'm not performing or going out and doing those things.
No, a lot of it is fantasy. But it is definitely a more freedom-focused mindset.
I feel like you made it okay for a lot of people in the crowd or watching on social media or watching it on Netflix to go, yeah, I was feeling that too, but I wasn't sure it was all right to say it.
It's what's so funny. You're right, because, I mean, it's the first joke in the special, and I really just kind of sat on it because the laugh just kept growing. I don't even say anything. I really felt it was exactly what you're saying. Like, they laughed because I was saying it was funny, but then they were kind of like allowing themselves to feel that feeling also, and the laugh just kept building.
You got a whole bunch of college age kids looking at their parents like, that's not funny.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Why are you laughing? Like, what's so funny
about
that?
You have a life without me?
You know, it was in looking at the way, and you interview a lot of people in your podcast and your shows, excuse me, and a lot of people describe you as just that guy that they like sitting down and talking to, the person who just seems to enjoy bringing joy to other people. You try your best to not get too far down the, you know, the divisive political rabbit hole that we are in right now. You tell me, is it cool that so many people just generally describe you as very talented, but I just like that guy. That's somebody you like to see succeed.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it is. When I see those comments of like, you know, you got me through the pandemic, or it's so nice to spend time with your books or your comedy, and it's like an escape and that kind of thing. It's I do appreciate it because it is what I'm trying to do. You know, I'm trying to not be vulgar. You know, I'm not that way in my life. You know, it just has to reflect who you are. And people ask, like, is it a choice to wear clean? And it's not. I talk about adult things and edgier things, but I just don't swear like that because I don't really do that in my everyday life. I don't find that attractive. And sometimes I would think or still think, you know, are the guys that are that way, do they get further along because they're shocking and they're vulgar and they're whatever? And there are definitely a lot of people that do it, and a lot of people are very successful at it. But I refuse to go down that path. And so when people say that they find my thing to be a nicer space and a more joyful place, I appreciate that because it confirms that there are people like myself who want that.
Yeah.
As entertainment.
It just feels more authentic, right? Like, I'm not sitting here passing judgment on people who use profanity in their comedy. Do them if it is in fact them.
Right.
But I think it's also cool that that cannot be you and still have that level of success.
Exactly. And, you know, yeah, there are guys that work that way and who are brilliant. And then there's other people who you can tell.
Right.
They're all of a sudden starting to use like political stuff because they're getting response. They're using vulgarity or sex to get response. If it's that, if they're chasing like this validation from an audience who they don't really even respect or care about, but they're doing it for like a marketing sense, mm-hmm. I'm not cool with that.
Well, that kind of speaks to what we were talking about before. Are you doing it because it genuinely makes you happy and you like seeing those responses and it is freeing and you like being on stage, or are you doing it for the check? And either or, I mean, again, do you.
And it's all good, and it's all good, and we all have to make a living and all of that. And look, I have a lot of my friends are very, very funny, but I know off stage they're exactly the same way. You know what I mean? They're still like, 14-year-old guys who are just making the grossest jokes, but they're so good at it and they're so funny and I enjoy it, but it's not me. So why would I pretend? Like, even in the beginning of my career, I would go to the Comedy Cellar and there'd be like Dave Attell and Nick DiPaolo and Colin Quinn, like all these like edgy guys. And I was like, oh, I've got to be edgy when I get here. And I would start swearing or just trying to talk about stuff. And you could even sense the audience going like, what are you doing?
Right.
They didn't even know me yet, but they could just tell from my essence. They're like, I'm not buying it.
Nah, it's like the hip hop artist starting from the bottom when they didn't.
Right.
That's
right.
Your whole performance. I started from the bottom and you in the suburbs. Private school.
Your dad was a record executive.
Right, exactly. Do your thing if it's actually your thing. Another review I saw that I thought was cool, and it kind of fits the times that we're in right now. You were described as the ultimate escapist comedian on one hand. I actually saw that on your Instagram page. And also kind of spoke to ignorance of the news can be bliss sometimes. And I will extend that when the news can be so divisive and potentially problematic. Is that a choice or is that just who you are?
Yeah, I think that I think we're in this very unique situation as human beings. No other human being. There's always been bad stuff on the planet. Some of it a lot worse than what we have to deal with on a daily basis. I mean, just surviving. But we're the first human beings that have to see everybody's problems and every single thing that's wrong in our face every single day. That's too much information. We're not designed for that. We weren't supposed to be able to see all of that. We have two eyes in the front of our heads, and this is our community, and this is what you got to deal with. And now it's the whole universe on your phone, in your face. That is toxic. That is a new thing that human beings have to deal with. And I truly don't believe that we need to know it all. I don't think we have to know. It would crush you if you every day took to heart all the suffering that's happening in the world. It just doesn't, there's no way to survive that. And on a lesser level, I've watched people in my family get addicted to cable news and it wrecked them. It was all they could talk about and they just made them angry. And it just, I was like, I had this one uncle who just got so influenced by this news. And I'm like, yeah, I know it's all bad, but you've got 30 more years here. Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Like, let's go eat. Let's go. Why are we even like, this isn't, your whole being should not be digesting this stuff because you're not changing it. You're not, it's just killing you. And he did pass away this, you know, later on, and was like, oh man, he was so fun and great. And we had so many good times. And then the end of it was just, he just became this antenna for all the bad news being thrown at him, and it robbed him of, you know, a good 25 years. So I love being concerned. I don't love, but I think it's our responsibility to care for people and be aware of what's going on to a point. It can't be everything. This brain is only, can only handle so much.
Yeah, we deserve and can be happy, not consumed by all of these other things all the time.
Yeah.
All right, we're running up against the clock. So tell us, you're on tour. That's, you know, pretty consistently on tour.
Yeah.
So tell us.
Yeah, we just announced our new Grateful Bread tour.
Yes. So tell us about the Grateful Bread tour.
Yeah, that's going to be in 2025. A listener from my radio show actually named it, which is so great. The Grateful Bread tour is so funny. And we're hitting a whole bunch of great, great venues. We're going to Chicago. We're going to the Chicago Theater. We're going to the Beacon in New York. We're going to California, Atlanta, Dallas, and we're, so many great venues. And we just posted it. And it's so funny because, like I was saying, like at the end of the year, you get pretty tired.
Yeah.
And now to be talking about the tour next year. And I saw on the map all those dots of the places I'm going to be standing at a certain point. I was like, whew, I'm going to let my agent handle this one for a bit. But I'm really psyched. There'll be a whole new thing, a whole new act apart from everything that I've been developing since my last special.
Very cool. And we can get that information following you on social, online, and what have you. Generally speaking, before we wrap, I feel like there's always a show, a book, a special, the Grateful Bread Tour. What else should we be looking for? Or that certainly is enough.
Yeah, I think the podcast is really popping off now. Breaking Bread with Tom Papa. We've really, you know, like we were saying, like you have these stages in your career. The podcast has really elevated now, and we just had like Seinfeld on and Jimmy Kimmel and Henry Winkler and Julie Bowen and all these great guests are showing up. It's starting like a real great momentum, and that's on Spotify and YouTube. We filmed the whole thing in like this Italian restaurant kind of set, and we're making basically our own TV show on YouTube. So I'm really proud of that right now.
I love it. We end every episode of The Pulse with the concept that it sounds like is pretty much kind of your foundation. But we ask everybody who comes on to end by telling us what the phrase "use your voice for good" means to you.
Use your voice for good. I would say that means to me we all have, whatever it is that you do, whatever it is, not just your voice, like a comedic voice, but whatever thing that you're doing, you know, we're all in this together and we're all working, and there's a housekeeper here that's going to keep this place going. And there's a person that's on your board making this show happen. Whatever your voice is, just keep in mind that you're taking care of yourself and you're getting paid and you're doing your thing, but your work is also very valuable. And it's touching other people all the time. And if you're doing anything for other people, I think that's the good.
Tom Papa, I appreciate you taking time out of your extremely busy schedule, sharing some laughs, your story, taking some time with us. I appreciate it.
This was really great. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much. We've got somebody who is here who went and saw you and came in the next day after seeing your show and said, I don't care who else you book, you got to go book Tom Papa for the show.
Yeah, me and my wife said we went to your show in Borgata for our anniversary. So,
oh, beautiful. That's so great.
Really appreciate it. Good stuff.
I got your signed book right here.
Ah, nice.
I got to give it back. Podcast. Thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with comedian and host and author and bread maker, who knew, Tom Papa. I just enjoyed his story. One of the real pleasures of doing this show is that you get a chance to spend some extended time with people who maybe you've seen on tour or maybe you've heard about, maybe you've had casual interaction with them, but with extended amounts of time, you find out what motivates them, what they're about, and that they are generally good people. And I appreciate Tom Papa for being that person, or at least seeming to be, just a good guy. Do me a favor, hit like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is on your screen that gets you the notification the next time every week when a new episode of The Pulse comes out. You can follow me on social media at BillAFox29 and download our new Fox Local app. All of the shows, all 100 plus episodes of The Pulse right there at your fingertips on demand. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.